go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Let's go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook, everybody, for Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Patriots and the Oakland Raiders beginning to count it down to Sunday's 4:15 Eastern time kickoff in Oakland, California. We will be checking in, hopefully, as soon as we get an opportunity to hear from him with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, who is out at San Jose State where the Patriots are headquartered this week. We'll get the latest from the Patriots HQ in terms of what's going on in preparations. Certainly there has been news made off of the field concerning the Patriots today. I'll touch on that here in a couple of moments. In approximately 40 to 45 minutes from now, Mike White, Wagaman, who is the senior writer for Silver and Black Illustrated, it's hard to really say competitor because they have their own markets, but it's the equivalent for Patriots Football Weekly covering the Oakland Raiders, and Mike is going to join us later in this first hour of the program to go over what's wrong in Oakland, as if we didn't know the answer to that. But you realize, of course, he'll probably have to be somewhat measured in his response to the obvious, why the hell don't you just get rid of Al Davis question? So I don't know that that question will probably do any good to ask him, but we'll see what happens with Mike again coming up. And also in the second hour of the program, conference calls with the Oakland Raiders, specifically with their head coach, Tom Cable. They're going on with members of the Patriots media, I believe, as we are presently speaking here. So in that regard, when they are made available to us, we will share with you here on the program, if, of course, it is in time for today's program before we're done at 4 o'clock Eastern time or thereabouts. So until we can get a chance to check in with Eric Scalavino, obviously the biggest news of the day has to be off of the field. And I know the guys touched on this a little bit earlier in the show. There's really not a heck of a lot more to say other than the reports that have come through various Boston media sources. The Boston Herald has reported this. The Boston Globe has reported it. ProFootballTalk.com has reported it through the Boston sources. ESPN.com has just picked up on it as well. But Patriots quarterback Matt Cassel's father, Greg, apparently passed away yesterday. Matt did leave the team, as they are headquartered in San Jose, to be with his family. Beyond that, there's just not a lot to report at this time. So, no, we can't tell you whether or not he'll play on Sunday. And we're not even, you know, a couple of the sources haven't even said that it's his father, although most people, I think, are now saying that it was his father, Greg Cassel, who passed away. Just for those that may be tuning in and unaware of this, if you haven't done your searching through the internet today and you're just coming on for the first time, Matt's father and mother have been divorced, separated, since Matt was 14 years old. In 1996. So his mother actually had done the duties of the day-to-day raising of Matt and his three siblings since they split up back in 96. There's no real way of knowing, or even I don't know that it's our place to ask, what kind of a relationship he had with his father. Suffice it to say, whether it was good or bad or even indifferent, it's still going to come as quite a shock to him and his siblings and his family. I know that there are several of you that are already aware of this story that probably realize that Brett Favre went through something similar a few years ago, and obviously, ironically, I believe was also against the Oakland Raiders, in which he, you know, came back after the news of his father's death, and he had an unbelievable day. Now, we don't know that's going to be the case for Sunday. I first of all have to say that as someone who has recently lost a parent as well, my heart and my feelings and my thoughts And my prayers go to Matt and his family at this time. Usually something like this, and for those of us I know that I'm speaking to that have lost parents as we get older, or for those of us that have never known parents, but certainly those that have lost them as we get a little bit older, it's never an easy thing to get over. I'm not, and I don't pretend to tell anybody how to act or react to the loss of a parent, because I think everybody has to handle it somewhat differently. It largely probably depends on the kind of relationship that you had with that parent. But suffice it to say, in the majority of cases, it's a very difficult thing to overcome. I really don't and wouldn't blame Matt if he felt he needed the time to grieve and needed Sunday off. At the same time, trying to put myself in his shoes, honestly, you know, sometimes the best thing you need is work, because it keeps your mind busy. And maybe you need other things to concentrate on. I know that's what was the case apparently in Brett Favre's instance a few years ago. He needed to get away from the family for a time, just because the sadness was crushing. So let's give Matt some time on this. Suffice to say, from a football standpoint, it almost seems pointless to go over this, but I will. From a football standpoint, I'm sure that preparations will be made in the event that Matt does not return for Sunday's game. And that would mean, of course, getting Kevin O'Connell additional reps this week and giving him a chance to work with the first team as much as possible, just in the event that Matt decides he needs to be with his family. And honestly, I can understand completely if he would want to do that. And I'm sure many of you could as well. I would love to hear from you. If you have some thoughts that you'd like to share, please send them here, webradio@patriots.com. If you have something, you know, that you'd like to send to Matt and the team, I mean, the team isn't officially saying anything, and I think you can probably understand why, in particular, at this stage, they're not saying anything. It is a private matter. It is a personal matter. We only found out about this through the Boston Herald's report. Boston Herald has Karen Gregian in San Jose with the team this week covering, and this is one of the things that we're going to ask Eric about when he was able to hook up with us today from San Jose to get some confirmation on this as well, and that perhaps is part of the reason why he hasn't blogged yet. I don't know. I can only surmise. The team, just this is a personal matter, and you may not even get a team comment from this. Don't be surprised if it doesn't happen. If Matt okays it, then maybe the team will say something. But, you know, quite frankly, it is a personal matter, and so it's been reported in the media. We're sharing it with you here because I know as Patriots fans, football fans, you have some concern, and you also want some kind of confirmation if indeed it is true. And based on what we've been able to hear from several media sources now, but most of them pointing toward the original Boston Herald and later a Boston Globe report, Matt's father, Greg, has passed away. So at any rate, if you do have some thoughts you would like to share, you certainly may use this as an outlet. And when appropriate, we will forward them to the proper folks with the Patriot football team, hopefully to send to Matt as well. So there you go. webradio@patriots.com is the email address, and that's how you reach us here on the program. I may or may not, if you do decide you want to send something to Matt through this particular venue, I may or may not read that on the air. If you'd like to, you know, share it with everybody else, that might be a Patriots fan or a football fan here in the listening audience, that's great. If you intend this for one person and one person alone, if you're going to send it this way, please make sure you indicate that in your email, and then we'll see if we can't forward it on to Fred, and then what we'll do is we'll have those compiled to perhaps print out or send on to Matt and or the appropriate people. Okay? So that's the very latest where the Matt Cassel story is concerned. I realize it is the Oakland Raiders this week. It's a little, I have to admit, the idea of playing a football game when something like this happens within your family, and let's face it, we may not be close family, but, you know, in this particular family that is the New England Patriots, it's still a difficult thing to deal with. And as I said earlier, you know, having gone through this myself and then not too, in the recent past anyway, you almost don't know how to treat it. You almost don't know how to handle it. You don't know if you should go on and just kind of pick up, or you don't know if you need to pay the proper respect and spend some doubt. It just, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. And I suppose if you've gone through this, you know a little about what I'm talking about. And if you have gone through something like this, you know, your experiences are welcome. I would certainly love to hear from you at webradio@patriots.com. But in the meantime, we'll go ahead and pour onward here because, you know, this team, with or without Matt this week, is still going to play a football game on Sunday. This team is still in a struggle for a potential playoff spot. There's no question, as we spent some time talking about this yesterday on the program, that the Patriots need to win out. They need to win these final three games of the season to have a shot. I think the one thing that we really didn't point out yesterday that probably deserves to be pointed out right here and now before we go on any further over the tie-breaking and what happens here and what happens if such and such does this. The fact of the matter is that the Patriots and the Dolphins and the Jets, the three teams who are 8-5 right now in the AFC East, these three teams cannot all three finish tied for the AFC East title. It's an impossibility. Well, no, it's not an impossibility, really. But if somebody wins out, they can't all three win out and tie. They could all three lose a game potentially and tie, yes. That's because Miami and New York play in the final week of the regular season when the Patriots play Buffalo. So if those two teams win their next two, somebody's going to finish 10-6, and somebody's going to finish 11-5. And if the Patriots win out, then they would be in a two-way tie. And I think we, as we discussed yesterday, two-way ties with either the Jets or Miami appear to not be in the Patriots' favor. Now, again, I need a little clarification on a potential two-way tie with Miami, because it would appear with common opponents, the Patriots might still have an edge, depends on what they consider common opponents. So I just needed a little clarification on that one before we went onward. That's something I know for a fact that we will clear up without any doubt at all on tomorrow's program. Just to give you a little bit of a tease there, because Russell Baxter from ESPN, our NFL research coordinator who joins us each week here inside the playbook, he'll join us as he normally does on Thursdays, and we'll just ask, okay, we got to look at this tiebreaker thing here because this is something that we all have to talk about now. This is something that is important, and it looks like it could very well come into play, provided the Patriots hold up their end of the bargain and win these last three games. So we'll ask Russell more about that on tomorrow's program and see if we can't get some definition to it. Sounds a little silly because obviously there's still a lot of football to be played in the regular season, but frankly, you know, that's what we do here. We look ahead and we supply conjecture and we put theory out there and we talk about a lot of what if scenarios, and that's part of what we're doing here. So it would be in the Patriots' best interest if they are to win out and to have both New York and Miami lose, and therefore they would have a game up in the standings, and the best either team could do would be 10-6, and if the Patriots are 11-5, well, obviously they're in. Here's the wild thing about it all. Mathematically speaking, the Patriots are still alive. If they were to win out, they're still alive for a bye in the playoffs. They could actually sneak in as an 11-5 division champ, I believe, and still get in as a bye. The only team that's guaranteed to have a better record right now than the Patriots would obviously be Tennessee. Pittsburgh, I'd say that it's unlikely that they fall with 10 wins, but you know, if they did lose three in a row. Baltimore would have to lose one, if not two. And then, of course, that would be impossible for Pittsburgh to lose three in a row because, quite frankly, they have to still play Baltimore. So I guess that one, it would probably be very difficult. It may even have to be a fluke, and that's probably one of those scenarios that may have myriad possibilities. Certainly they could finish as a 3 seed, but that wouldn't give them a bye in the opening round. That still means they'd have to play in the wild card weekend. And I think we all realize now that seeds 2 through 6 in the AFC this year, looking ahead here, seeds 2 through 6 are going to be pretty evenly matched. And you know, and even though Tennessee's had an unbelievable season, I mean, they've had, you know, the type of season that certainly I think, you know, the Patriots felt like they had last year in a lot of ways. Right? I mean, you know, the Patriots, yeah, they went undefeated, but, you know, the Titans are having that kind of season this year. And I don't know that anybody really feels like the Titans are head and shoulders above everybody else, like maybe the Patriots were felt of last year. And, of course, we all know what happened ultimately. You know, the Patriots did get beat. There is just no one super team. Two or three teams that you could put in the, you know, above everybody else category, but just no one super team. So whether it's 2 through 6 or 3 through 6 in the AFC, it's pretty evenly matched. The only difference would be is being a division champ, you get a home game. So you would get a chance to play, let's say, if the Patriots finished 11-5, Pittsburgh goes on and wins their division, then that would mean, of course, the Patriots would finish as no worse, I don't think, than the 3 seed, because Denver is a shoe-in to win the West, and the Patriots hold a tiebreaker over Denver with the win. And because of that, they would get to host the 6 seed, which right now could be either Indianapolis or Baltimore. So you'd at least get the chance to host on Wild Card Weekend. All right, let's check in now with San Jose, California, and Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Eric, how goes the battle today?
John, how you doing back there?
We're hanging in today, hanging in.
I heard you guys had some snow when we were over in Seattle last weekend. Is that still the case, or did it melt already?
It has turned from snow, which is just a brief flurry, and cold weather, to rainy and windy today. I mean, it's like there's a monsoon going on.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, totally different than what we have out here. I'm looking up at cloudless blue skies. A little chilly for out here. Temperatures are probably lower 60s, upper 50s, but certainly a lot more conducive to playing football than what you have out there.
Absolutely. By the way, Fred wanted me to ask you, where you been and how come you're not blogging?
I've been blogging the whole week. What's he talking about?
I don't know.
Tell him not to worry about it. Tell him everything's under control. He's just trying to stir the pot. That's what he does best.
Yeah, he's trying to tweak you. You know that.
Trying to get under my skin, of course. I'm not going to let it happen.
See now.
Yeah. There he is. He's always around.
Yeah, he's omnipresent.
So, you've probably already mentioned this, but some disturbing news for the Pats.
Yeah, about
this week.
Matt Castle's father, right.
None of us here have had a chance yet to either see or speak to Matt about this. We're going to try to find out. The players are expected to get here any minute now, actually. So at any point in our conversation here, John, I may have to let you go when that happens. But for now, we're waiting for them to show up and waiting to get an update on Castle's his situation for the week. We don't know when he's going to leave, if he hasn't already, to go take care of business with his family, how long he'll be gone, how this will affect the team as far as its preparations for this weekend. We don't really have any update with that yet because this development is just happening so quickly. And
right.
Like I said, we haven't had a chance yet to talk to anybody who's in the know. Hoping to know more within the hour or so once the players and coaches arrive and have their scheduled time with the media. But for now, that's kind of the big story of the day as we start in earnest practice preparations for the Oakland game this weekend out here at San Diego State.
If you'll do me a favor, could you, if you find out something, if Coach Belichick is able to say something or whatever, before we're done with the program, could you call back into Dan, or if you have a chance to come back on for 2 minutes just to give us the update, could you do that?
I'll do my best to do that. The way the schedule works out here is the coach comes out first and has his few minutes with the media. while the players are sort of getting dressed and ready for practice. And then as they come out to practice, we sort of pull them. It's kind of like training camp where, at the end of practice, you get them in training camp. Well, here it's just the opposite. We get them at the beginning as they're going out to practice.
Gotcha.
So there could be some times when there's lulls in between. So if I do find something out, I'll do my best at the first opportunity to get it over to you guys.
All right, very good. Now, the team actually had yesterday off, I believe, in preparation for Oakland. Is that correct, or was it today?
It was the normal Tuesday off, just like any other week, because, you know, we flew in from Seattle on Sunday night, got in at a pretty reasonable hour, about 8:30, 9 o'clock or so by the time we checked in and got everyone to their rooms. Monday was a normal Monday, as it would be at Gillette, you know, watching film of the previous day's game and having positional meetings and whatnot. And then Tuesday was the normal NFL day off. And today is the normal Monday, if you will, for football players. On a Wednesday, sort of the Monday of the NFL week. And so here we are, ready for it to start. And just got to say, from the last time we were here, the playing surface at San Jose State's practice fields, which are right behind the Spartan Stadium here, looked to be in much better condition than they were 2 months ago, which is kind of odd because it was theoretically warmer when we were here 2 months ago. But the field is in a lot better shape, and we actually talked to one of our Gillette Stadium groundskeeper guys who's out here on the trip, who was also here with us in October. And he even said that, by the looks of it, the field is in much better condition. So that's a positive note, because when we were out here before, the field was a little rough. It was patchy. There were some lumps in places. It just wasn't what we're used to seeing, from an NFL field. But again, it's a college field. I think they might have learned a few things from the last time we were here, and they've gotten the field in better shape. So that's good to see.
Well, it's interesting. I would assume then that had San Jose not been able to attend to this, that my guess would be the Patriots would have looked elsewhere. But then again, I mean, we don't really know that.
Well, I think given the short time frame in between when the last trip was and when this one was, I think it might have been more difficult to secure a different location. So I think we would have been back here no matter what. But I think in that time frame between the last time we were here and now, they, you know, like I said, they may have learned a few things, corrected some things that needed correcting, and everything looks to be ready to go. And I think it's better that they're back here again anyway, because you already know what you're getting into. You know, you're familiar with the routine. It's as close to being familiar as you can get being away from home. So I think that also works in the Pats' favor.
Yeah, I would think so. We certainly have injury situations to deal with in addition to the Matt Cassel story today, with Teddy Bruschi having flown back to Boston. Let me share this with you, because I got this little nugget from my good friend John Clayton at ESPN. And he says that the Patriots are kind of going through a little bit of a decision-making process when it comes to trying to decide what to do about Teddy. As he flew back to Boston to undergo tests for his knee that he injured in the win over Seattle, apparently he does not need to have it surgically repaired. This is according to a source reporting to John. But there apparently may not be enough games left in the season to get him back on the field. In other words, time frame might be 4 to 6 weeks. And until the Patriots can find some kind of a replacement for Bruschi, they really aren't yet ready to put him on the IR. Can you add anything to that?
That's kind of what we were hearing out here as well, that it's one of these things where it's a rock and a hard place. The good news is it doesn't sound like it's that bad an injury. The bad news is there may not be enough time left in the season to get him back. So you sort of have to make a quick decision here on whether you want to risk keeping him on the roster and not having anyone else to fill that spot, or just letting him go for the season and trying to get some live body in who can make a contribution. It's a tough situation to be in. And, you know, like I said, at this point, with it having been a normal Monday and Tuesday, which normally the access is very limited, we're just now starting to find that sort of thing out. And as I say that, the buses are just rolling up, John, so I think the players and coaches are about to arrive, and hopefully I can get some more information for you. But I'm going to have to let you go and try to to work on that. And first opportunity I get, I'll call you guys back and let you know what we found out.
Sounds like a plan, Eric. Thanks.
Okay, no problem. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly, reporting live out from San Jose State, where the Patriots are headquartered, and with the players and the coaches pulling up, we'll let him go do his job for Patriots Football Weekly and here on the website. And then if he's able to find out, as he said, any definitive information on either the Matt Castle story and the situation there, or if with the injury problems with Teddy Bruschi, then he's going to give us a buzz back here later in the program, and he will check in, and we will bring it to you first right here inside the playbook. So some breaking news perhaps to talk about. All right, let's go ahead and let's take a timeout here. And then we've got Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated, who's coming up here in about 10 to 15 minutes. Your emails, webradio@patriots.com. That's the address. If you have some thoughts on the tragedy that has befallen Matt Castle, if you have some thoughts on Teddy Bruschi and what you think the Patriots might do with his roster spot if they can't find another linebacker, then I would certainly welcome those suggestions. Maybe there's another name out there that we haven't thought of. And when we come back from the break, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a name that maybe you haven't yet considered, maybe you have, not only as a replacement for Bruschi, but if you still think the Patriots need a little help in the defensive backfield, I've got a name for you, and I'd be curious as to your reaction if the Patriots decide to make a play for this gentleman. So we'll do all of that coming up right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games,
birthday parties,
baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh,
affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you gonna love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie, both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
Back inside the playbook here for a Wednesday. I'm John Rook, webradio@patriots.com. And 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated will join us here in about 10 minutes, so stay tuned for that. And hopefully we've got conference calls coming up in hour number two of the program today, and we'll bring you up to date on all the other stuff that's going on. All right, now I mentioned some names for you here, at least initially. You probably have read some of the media reports in the absence of or since the injury to Teddy Bruschi in the win over Seattle on Sunday. Matt Chatham's name has come up because I know that he hasn't, he's not currently on a roster anywhere based on what I've been able to find. I saw his name mentioned in a couple of different media reports this morning as well because he certainly, you know, knows the system. But again, kind of like the same situation with Junior Seau and Roosevelt Colvin when they were brought into the fold last week, it's a question of, you know, not only locating, but, you know, is the party ready, willing, and able, you know, to fulfill that particular role? You know, that I would assume, again, depending upon what they ultimately decide to do with Teddy Bruschi, is part of the overall process of trying to do what to do with the roster spot. It may very well be that they decide to go with what they have. Maybe Larry Izzo gets some time in terms of, you know, his ability to play on the inside. Who knows how that will particularly play out, but I'm sure that'll be amongst the items that the Patriots are discovering. Apparently, again, according to a couple of different sources, is apparently when Bruschi knocked his knee with Mike Richardson on Sunday, he has a medial collateral ligament problem, and it doesn't say whether it's a tear or a bruise or a strain. It's just something with the medial collateral that needs a little time to heal. And if that is the case, that it does not look like he would be able to return for the remainder of the regular season. Apparently, the conjecture is here, based on, again, the two sources that I'm reading from today on this particular story, that it's a 4 to 6 week type of situation for him to heal, that he'd need to be away from football for that long. So it's conceivable anyway, that he could return in the playoffs or during the playoffs. And perhaps that is part of what is trying to be decided upon this week after everything that he has gone through with his physician in Boston, and the determination is made, okay, is there a chance to get him back this year? And if there is a chance to get him back this year, what do we do with the roster spot? And if we're going to IR him, then we'll fill the roster spot. So anyway, that's what they're going through right now in terms of Teddy Bruschi. But suffice to say, he isn't playing this week against Oakland. That isn't going to happen. After coming back this way, since leaving the team after Seattle. And it looks, certainly for all practical purposes, unless we're told otherwise, it would appear at this stage that Teddy is done for the regular season. But we'll have to wait and see, you know, how it works out here. We don't really know, I guess, is how long they can hold on to the roster spot, especially because, you know, we know that they're very thin at linebacker right now. So I guess in that regard, in order to be able to make up for that roster spot, they might go ahead and IR him here fairly soon. Who knows? I'd be shocked if we didn't hear something within the next couple of days in terms of what Teddy Bruschi's at least immediate future for this season will entail here with New England. The other thing I was going to bring up here is the fact that there was a veteran cornerback in the NFL released today. And, you know, it's not exactly a name, a household name, but it certainly, I think, gives you a little sense of what's out there and is there some help. And, you know, considering that, you know, even a guy like Ellis Hobbs hasn't been completely healthy, here's a guy who could step in and give you, I would think, quality minutes, depending upon, you know, what you deem his abilities to be in the first place. It's Brian Kelly, cornerback for the Detroit Lions, who was released by the Lions. He did not play at all in their loss to Minnesota on Sunday. He had fallen down on the depth chart on the Lions, which sounds almost incredible to believe when a team is 0-14 and you have a veteran player. You know, Kelly is 32 years old. He had spent 10 years with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He became a free agent and signed a 3-year deal with the Lions just this past March. And the reason that he had signed with the Lions is because he was being reunited in a way with former coach Rod Marinelli, who was a defensive line coach for the Bucs from the mid-90s to, what was it, I think 2005 as the story went. So, at any rate, Kelly had started in 11 games this year for the Lions, 26 tackles, no picks. The Lions, by the way, signed Dexter Wynn to replace Kelly on the active roster. So Brian Kelly is available. Now, considering what the Patriots did earlier this year by going out and obtaining you know, a guy like Delta O'Neal off the scrap heap after he was released by Cincinnati, how do you feel about Brian Kelly? Would this be a move that you would advocate in particular? Is there somebody else out there that you feel like, you know, based on the research that you've done or what you've read or who you've spoken to might be around? I mean, to me, I don't know that you can fill the linebacker spot. You're already thin in the secondary. You know, the secondary to me is, to me, I think this is worth a shot. I mean, why not? You need bodies. You need capable bodies. This guy has played, you know, 10, now 11 years in the NFL. I realize he played for a really bad Detroit team, but apparently some of that is not necessarily his fault. I'd be curious to know how you feel about it. So Brian Kelly from the Detroit Lions is available. And we'll see if maybe the Patriots decide to somehow make a move one way or the other on it. Yeah, I guess it's anything's possible at this stage of the game. So anyway, that was the roster move that I had seen today that I wanted to share with you, since the Patriots might still be in the market for extra help in the defensive backfield before all is said and done this season. I don't know if you saw this story as well, but I think it's worth bringing up here because we did talk yesterday, and I asked some of you your thoughts on how your habits, how your consumption habits in terms of the Patriots, in terms of the NFL, in terms of sports in general, might be changing because of the economic downturn. Didn't get a lot of response to that particular question, although we did get a few responses. And I think, at least from the few responses we got, was is that it's not changing your habits much at all, at least not yet. Now, I could be speaking, I realize, to an entirely different audience today. Perhaps your habits have already been curbed somewhat because of the economic downturn, and if that is the case, I'd still like for you to let me know in what way your habits have been curtailed. webradio@patriots.com. And if you live overseas, maybe you're listening to us from the UK today or somewhere else in Europe, one of our European outposts, if it hasn't affected you, that's fine. I'd like to know if it has or it hasn't, and where you're located, and whether or not you even foresee, if things continue to get a little risky out there, if you can foresee having to cut back on some of the things that you like to do in terms of following your favorite teams and in football in particular. This story came out today, and I actually admit it is a little bit shocking. It's a little bit shocking. The Arena Football League apparently is expected now to cancel this next season. It would be its 23rd season in 2009. Several media reports are going with this story today. The Rocky Mountain News in Denver reported today that league officials are expected to make the announcement before the end of this week. The Kansas City Star is also reporting that the communications director for their team, the Kansas City Brigade, says that the players' union in the AFL agreed late last night to suspend operations. The quote from Pete Likens, who is the communications director for the Brigade, in the Star, says, "It's pretty much a done deal to suspend the 2009 season and work toward a single entity league. We plan to start up again in 2010. Now, the league has been looking over the last couple of years to try to find some ways to improve its finances. They, for what it's worth, officially are saying that they are not yet ready to announce a long-term plan. They have delayed the release of their 2009 schedule. They have put off their dispersal draft because they have had a couple of teams, New Orleans most definitely, which has ceased operations, and they have put off the start of free agency as well. So it's a story that bears watching, because as the economic downturn in this country continues to affect all of us, it is now beginning to reach into the realm of professional sports, if indeed the AFL is going to suspend operations for 2009. All right, so a couple of news items to share with you today. Now, let's turn our attentions back to the facts of the matter, and the Patriots getting ready to tackle the Oakland Raiders on Sunday in Oakland. Mike Wagaman covers the Raiders, senior writer for Silver and Black Illustrated. He joined us here inside the playbook. Mike, it's great to speak with you. Thanks for some time today.
Absolutely no problem, John. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. I assume you have probably heard the stories that we're trying to follow a little bit here concerning Matt Cassel and the fact that he is out there with the team, and there are reports out there that his father has passed away. So, you know, it sounds almost crazy to talk about it from a football sense, because he certainly deserves to have time with his family. I know that Oakland has also had some questions as to whether or not Jamarcus Russell might even be healthy enough to suit up and play this Sunday. From the Oakland standpoint, how do you guys look at this particular bit of news today?
Well, I mean, you know, it is obviously a tragic story, and one that you send your condolences immediately out to the Cassel family. But from the Raiders standpoint, you know, from a football side of things, and like you say, it seems almost kind of cold to even discuss it. But, you know, the fact that it happened, I guess, earlier in the week, you know, maybe Matt is able to get back with his family and still return in time for the game for the Patriots. You hope he's able to. And in the past, I remember Brett Favre coming into Oakland for that Monday night game,
sure,
a day after his father passed away, and having, you know, arguably one of the greatest games of his career. And so, you know, you never write an athlete off or anything in these situations, you know, because you just never know how they're going to react. But from the Raiders' standpoint, you know, I think that it really doesn't matter who the quarterback is going to be. They've just had so many problems on both sides of the ball that it really doesn't matter who lines up opposite them right now. I mean, you know, coming off that loss to San Diego last Thursday, in which they just got thoroughly and completely manhandled, and you know, afterwards in the locker room, you heard Nnamdi Asamoah questioning whether guys are taking it seriously. And in the back, all you hear is just loud laughter, you know, after this team just got really embarrassed on Monday night, or, you know, Thursday night football, national television. So, no, the Raiders have far too many issues to be affected. And, you know, if the Patriots are forced to play without Cassel, you know, the Raiders may try to blitz a little bit more and try to shake up whoever is back there. But, again, I just really don't think that from the Raiders' standpoint they can afford to be too concerned with what's happening on the other side of the ball. They have too many issues for themselves to take care of.
Mike, have some of the guys on this Raiders team, do you think that they've packed it in for this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely think you saw that Thursday. I mean, there were signs before, you know, here and there that had packed it in. But I think it became a bigger issue last week in San Diego. And now, you know, you're talking about Raiders close out with the Patriots, with the Texans, and then Tampa Bay. You know, all three teams are right in the thick of the playoff chase, and all three of those teams have everything to gain and nothing to lose. And the Raiders are, you know, already focusing on next year. They're probably going to have a new head coach, and, you know, they're going to have to go through another big round of free agency and try to fill some of these gaping holes that they have. So, yeah, I think you can definitely sense that, you know, at least with some players, there's a sense of malaise and a sense of, you know what, the season's over and I'm going to collect my paycheck and get out of here and worry about next year.
Wow. You know, I think that's we've all probably seen teams, heard about teams, even covered teams at some point in time in our careers, where you wonder whether or not some guys on a team, yeah, have kind of packed it in because things have always gone a little bit south or what have you. Put a percentage on the number of players on this team that you feel have decided to pack it in.
I would really keep it to a minor handful. And you know, the one thing about this Raiders team that I will say, that when you look at all the distractions they've had to deal with, you know, beginning last March when Lane Kiffin reportedly received a letter from Al Davis asking him to resign, mm-hmm. you know, and on through all the whole drama of that soap opera, and then, you know, the changing of the offensive, you know, who's calling the plays on offense, and, you know, releasing D'Angelo Hall. There's been so many side shows going on to this team, and remarkably, and I will give the players a ton of credit for this. For the most part, they've done a really good job insulating themselves from it. Now, you know, I think that with any team you have, you know, especially a team that's sitting with a 3-9 record, you know, you're going to get guys that are looking, you know, packing it in. And with the Raiders, I'm going to say it's a small minority, a very, very small minority. You know, I still look at guys like Justin Fargas, their running back, who, you know, his nickname since college has been Crash Test Dummy just because he throws his body up in there. And if you watch that guy, and if you watch a guy like Nnamdi Asamoah and their tight end, Zach Miller, these guys are still going hard. And, you know, I give them a lot of credit because there's just been so much going on that it would have been really easy for this entire team to just, like you say, pack it in. And that could have happened a long time ago.
I would imagine that you brought up Nnamdi's name a couple of times, and first of all, congratulations for, you know, coming through with a pronunciation like that. You've probably been used to that by now, huh?
It took us a while. I remember, I'll never forget the day he was drafted. Tagliabue just butchered the name, and you know, we got a quick schooling on it, and it took us a couple times, you know, from Nnamdi, who was very, very patient, and you know, he was really good about it. Said that. That was probably the one thing that bothered him most in college, wasn't switching from safety to corner and back to safety. It was that, you know, having to explain his how to pronounce his name to people. But, you know, he's truly one of the class guys in the league and, you know, almost doesn't fit in with the Raider image, you know, in so many ways. And but a guy who's going to be very rich one way or another in the offseason. He's a free agent. And,
well, I was,
you know, there's
yeah. That's where I was going with this, because obviously, you know, the Patriots have a definitive need in the defensive backfield, and so I wonder how much of ever do you think Oakland will try to keep him around?
Well, I think, you know, it's not a question of whether Oakland wants to keep him around. They definitely want to keep him around, and they had a long-term deal on the table for him last year, but he turned mm-hmm. it down because he was worried about the direction the franchise was taking. He was concerned, and he wanted to see, you know, which direction they were going to go, what moves the team would make before he signed his name and before he committed to a long future here in Oakland. And so they, you know, he signed his franchise tender. And again, I think that, you know, they'll continue to try to work out a long-term deal. I can't imagine that what has gone on this year and talking to Nnamdi and knowing Nnamdi as well as I've gotten to know him over the years, I can't imagine his opinion on this team has changed very much. And I doubt that he will sign his name to a long-term deal. But I do see him playing again in Oakland next year. They'll just slap the franchise tag on him at least one more year, and then he'll probably hit free agency in 2010.
So he had the franchise tag put on him this year, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and he's got one more year he can do that then.
Right, and it's very similar to what the Raiders did a couple of years ago with Charles Woodson. They franchised
right.
him 1 year, paid him $10 million. This is a great story because he wanted to be the top paid cornerback in the league, and at the mm-hmm. time it was Champ Bailey who got an $18 million signing bonus. The Raiders said no, they didn't want to give Charles Woodson a long-term deal, but instead they franchised him for 2 years, paid him $21 million for 2 years, when they could have sat there and said, okay, here's your $19 million signing bonus, and you know we'll give you the veteran's minimum, backload the rest of the deal, which is common practice. They could have had him. They could have had him for the same money that they paid him for 2 years. They could have had him locked up to a long-term deal. And, you know, it's a similar situation out here with Nnamdi, though I think it's less about money with him and more about wanting to play for a winning franchise. He hasn't played for a winning team since he was drafted into the NFL.
Yikes. Yeah, that's true. Now, let me ask you something where this is concerned, because, frankly, I find it kind of intriguing. We know that, you know, Randy Moss gets a chance to come back this week and play in Oakland for the first time since Oakland dealt him this way. But then again, earlier this year, as a part of that whole, you know, Al Davis thing that came out, he let it out of the bag that he thought the Patriots had done some tampering, which, of course, the NFL later said, well, we don't find anything to that, that maybe just Mr. Davis being Mr. Davis.
Mr. Davis, yeah.
Yeah, well,
I mean, that was part of that whole rambling press conference he held to announce the firing of Lane Kiffin.
Right.
And out of nowhere, as you say, he just came up with this charge that the Patriots had tampered with Moss. And my first question out of the box was, why are we hearing about this, you know, a year after the fact?
Right.
If the Patriots had indeed tampered, and Al Davis being Al Davis, he would have immediately contacted the NFL, and there would have been a major uproar over that. The fact of the matter was, according to Lane Kiffin, who I tend to believe more often than I will the Raiders' skewed view of life, Randy Moss just simply did not want to play in Oakland anymore. He said it was no offense to the new coaching staff coming in at the time, which was Kiffin, but that he just didn't want to play in Oakland anymore. And that fit in lines with the things that he was saying during his final year, you know, here in Oakland, when he said it was like walking around on eggshells and it just was just not a healthy situation. And, you know, I'm not surprised that he's rebounded the way he has in New England. Superior athlete, and, you know, it's shown. It took some time for he and Castle to get on the same page, but, you know, that was to be expected. And, you know what I mean? Hey, if there's a receiver that I want on my side, as much as it bothers me to say it, knowing some things that I learned out here about Moss, but if there's a receiver I want on my side, it's Moss. And, you know, the guy's a great, great athlete. And, you know, it should be a great matchup depending on how the Raiders want to attack it, whether they're going to shadow Nambi on him or if they're just going to go ahead and play their straight man-to-man and let him match up with, you know, whichever side of the field he's on.
Let me ask you something here, Mike. Just because of this, I guess, perceived then by Al Davis notion that the Patriots might have tampered when it comes to Moss, do you think that would make him less likely to deal with New England for potential trade for Nnamdi if, of course, they would even decide that they didn't want to slap a franchise tag on the kid again?
Well, I think that a great indication of how Al feels about the New England Patriots, it goes back to when Lamont Jordan signed with the team. Mm-hmm. According to certain sources, one of the stipulations when the Raiders decided to let Lamont out of his contract was that he would not sign with specifically the New England Patriots. And then he went out and did it, and that to bother Al to no end. But as far as dealing for Nnamdi, the Raiders are going to ask at least 2 first-round draft picks for him. And while he actually may be one of the few players in the league that's really worth that and possibly more, I just don't see any team giving that up when they know that the Raiders are against the barrel. When they know, you know, again, it was the same situation with Charles Woodson a couple years ago. Teams didn't want to trade. You know, the Raiders wanted 2 first-round draft picks for him. Nobody wanted to give him that, and they just waited the Raiders out until, you know, they knew that Charles wasn't going to sign a long-term deal, and they waited the Raiders out until they cut him, and then Green Bay picked him up. So I imagine something very similar happening to Asamoah. You know, again, like I said, them franchising him for 1 more year, and then in 2010 he'll probably hit the market.
Hit the market that way. All right. Well, that certainly sounds like a plausible scenario. How is Jamarcus Russell? Is there a chance that he might play this Sunday, do you think?
Well, you know, in talking to him Monday, all indications were that it was, a mild to moderate ankle sprain on his right foot, and he intends to play. It was similar to an injury that he had earlier in the year that put him in a walking boot. You know, he wasn't in a walking boot after this game, but, you know, it was obviously sore enough to keep him out in the second half. So we'll find out today. Practice doesn't get over until about 2:30 local time out here. So we'll find out just how much practice he was able to get in. The other thing is that their backup, Andrew Walter, isn't exactly healthy either. So they're very, very limited. And, you know, when you have an offensive line that hasn't protected the quarterback nearly as well as they need to, you know, that's going to be a major issue. You know, the mobility of both those guys, if they're playing, they're both going to be playing with, you know, hobbled wheels, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots attack. Most teams have just blitzed the Raiders heavily and had great success with it. And I don't see any reason why the Patriots would want to get out of that same game plan.
Is Marcus Tuiasosopo still the third teamer?
Yeah, he is, and he actually got into a game earlier this year, again, when Jamarcus didn't start because of that earlier prior ankle injury. And Andrew Walter got injured late in the first half, and Tuiasosopo had to come in and play. And, didn't have a lot of success, and you know, and then Walter came back in and was able to finish out the game. But you know, it just really, again, kind of like what I was saying for the Raiders, it doesn't matter who they're playing. Really, for the Raiders right now, and it's been that case for a couple of years now, it doesn't matter who their quarterback is because they just don't have the means of protecting a guy, you know. And I thought that a couple of years ago when they had Kerry Collins here, I thought he got an unfair rap, and you look at mm-hmm. the success he's having with the Titans now, and it kind of vindicates him a little bit, and good for him. But the Raiders' offensive line has just been really, really bad, particularly at the tackles. Claim Harris on the left side and Cornell Green on the right side. No, but they've been unable to stop anyone, and that's enabled teams to just load up and go heavy after Jamarcus, which has really hurt, I think, his development in, you know, in his first full year as a starter.
How has Jake Grove been his center?
Well, Jake is hoping to play this week. He's missed the last couple games with a calf injury.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, like you said, it wasn't the knee, which he had microfracture surgery on in the off season. So, you know, Jake's done fairly well. I think that as a line, they know that they could have played better against the run. They were much better run unit last year, and they brought back four of the five starters from last year's team. So, and they haven't had the great success on the ground that they had a year ago. So I think that from that collective standpoint, they all know that they could have played better. But I think Jake has given them much better plays than he has in the past. But that being said, I do see that the Raiders will at least, you know, look at the free agent market and see if there's not a veteran center they can come in, they can sign and bring in to maybe push him. They signed John Wade, the Tampa Bay starter, the last couple of years, but you know, he really wasn't able to do what the Raiders hoped he would do, and has spent most of the season backing Jake up until, like I said, just recently when Grove was out. But all indications are that Jake will be back in the starting lineup this week.
Ashley Lalee did not play last week against San Diego. Is that correct?
Yeah, headache problems, and they didn't.
Any idea what his status is?
But no. Again, Monday when we last talked to Cable. Tom okay. Cable, the interim head coach, he had said that he expects Lalee to play this week. And it was not anything major. It was just, according to the Raiders, just a headache issue that he was unable to shake, which, you know, having had migraines in the past, and they didn't say whether this was a migraine or not, but those things can be really debilitating. So, but the plan is hopefully that he will be back in the starting lineup, and they need him. I mean, you know, he's been – you know, none of the receivers have been very productive. I don't think anyone, you know, they could have a chance, they could have a scenario this year where none of their wide receivers has more than 20 catches on the year, which is just amazing to me. But, you know, he's been one of the few steady guys that they've had in there. So they definitely need him in, excuse me, they definitely need him in for this game.
You mentioned, obviously, Justin Fargus a little bit earlier and what his value has meant to this team. How has Darren McFadden fit in with this team? Has he been a success as maybe you guys thought he might be?
Well, no, I think he's been far below what everybody had expected him to be. And the only reason for that, I think, is the fact that he's been slowed by turf toe injuries, first on his right foot for the early part of the year, and then just as he was getting that by, you know, on his left foot that forced him to miss three games. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Raiders' offense just isn't clicking as well when he's not involved. He is the straw that stirs this drink, to steal a line from back in the 70s in the Yankees. You know, it's just that the Raiders just have not done, I think, you know, A, when he was hurt, you know, that took a big chunk of their offense out. But when he's been in, they just haven't utilized him the way that you had expected him to. And we're talking about a kid who came out of college as a five-tool all-star. You know, he could throw, he could catch, he could run, he could block, I mean, he could do everything. The Raiders haven't used him that way. When they've run the Wildcat formation that he ran, you know, in Arkansas, and then the one that you see league-wide everybody using, they haven't had him throw. They haven't run an option. They haven't had him do much of anything other than hand off to Fargus straight up the middle or take it himself straight up the middle. You know, you would think with the problems they're having at wide receiver, they would split him out more. He did that in college, and he's got some of the best hands on the team, but they've been very limited into, you know, as to how they've used him. And repeatedly we've asked Cable about that. You know, when are you going to cut this guy loose now that he is healthy? And he keeps insisting that they are. But I looked at, you know, 2 weeks ago against Kansas City, he gets one touch in the second half. And then in against San Diego, he really wasn't a factor at all. And you know, for the most part, neither was anybody on offense. But he had one carry on offense and two catches against San Diego. So you're talking four catches in the last six quarters for a guy who was the fourth overall pick in the draft and still is arguably the only legitimate big playmaker they have on that offense. And it's just, it boggles the mind, you know, and like I said, what makes it even more perplexing is when Cable sits there and insists that they're doing a better job of getting him the ball.
Well, let me also jump to the defensive side real quick. And other than Asamoah, has anybody else stood out with any positive, residual effect?
Yeah, I think, Kirk Morrison, the middle linebacker, has quietly put together, you know, a very solid season. He, like everybody, has had trouble against the run, but I believe he's among the top six or seven players in tackles. He's constantly around the ball and has been, the leader of this defense since he really came into the league as a rookie, even playing alongside guys like Warren Sapp and Derek Burgess. And I think that he's quietly put together a very solid season. I don't think he'll get much recognition because when you look at all the problems they've had against the run this year, and the big lapses that they've had on defense, you know, I think that that will take away from some of the credit maybe he should deserve. And the other guy I think that's kind of stepped in and given them some, you know, better than expected minutes has been Kalimba Edwards, their defensive end, who leads them in sacks and really stepped up while Burgess was out and provided them with what little pass rush they've been able to generate this year.
It would seem to me that maybe the best part of this Oakland team, certainly from a consistency point of view, would be in the kicking game. Is that a correct assessment, you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, both kickers, too. You know, Shane Leckler, their punter, leads the AFC in net and also leads the AFC in kicks landed inside the 20, really has developed into, you know, probably the best all-around kicker and punter in the game today when you look at everything and the number of times he's had to, you know, come in and bail out this offense. And then on the other side of the coin, there's Sebastian Janikowski, who, you know, has gotten more and more notoriety for some of the more ridiculous situations that the Raiders have put him in, you know, kicking the 76-yard field goal before halftime against the Chargers, you know, in the first meeting between the two teams, and then trying to run a fake on 4th and 10 against the Chiefs when you pitch the ball, you know, between the holder's legs and 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So you're trying to get a 260-pound kicker to outrun a defense in theory 17 yards is just mind-boggling. But you take away those plays, Janikowski has been very, very solid and would probably be having his best year if they didn't put him into some of those, like I said, just, I don't know, head-shaking, mind-boggling, however you want to phrase it, situations that the team has put him in.
Has he hit a 76-yarder in practice?
No. Where that came from, I don't know. You know, last year, and I believe it was against Kansas City, he was trying to kick a game winner, and he kicked a 64-yard, it might have been Cleveland even, kicked a 64-yard attempt that hit about two-thirds of the way up the goalpost, the uprights, hit one of the uprights and banged away, you know, no good. But, man, another foot, you know, one way or the other, and that thing is good from 69, 70 yards. I mean, he definitely has the power, but everything, you know, in talking to him, everything has to go right. He even said on that 76-yarder that even if he kicked it as well as he kicked that 64-yarder attempt last year, that he didn't think he would have made it.
Worth a shot, though. I mean, why not, huh?
I think that was more of a shot, more of a Lane Kiffin parting shot at Al Davis in a veiled way. You know, Lane had repeatedly complained about the roster and some of the talent that the team had, you know, assembled and took veiled shots at him. And this was kind of like, okay, I know I'm going to be fired probably. And so here, I'll take this. Here's your first round kicker. Let him kick a 76-yard kick. And that's what I really think that was more of than anything else. But
a lot of us, I think, around here really, in all honesty, Michael, to even imagine it. How, in your estimation, has Tom Cable handled this season such as it has been?
You know, he's been put in such a real tough situation, taking over for the guy that brought him to Oakland. You know, I mean, Lane Kiffin personally brought Tom Cable over, and to have to step in and replace that guy, you know, immediately put Tom in an uncomfortable situation. And I think that he has tried to do the best that he could in this situation. The players, you know, for the most part, seem to support him. I haven't heard anything negative about him. But again, you know, I think he hurts himself when he makes decisions like, you know, calling for that fake field goal on 4th and 10, and then not, you know, giving Darren McFadden the ball, not making sure that this guy gets ball more often. You know, he took over play calling from their offensive coordinator Greg Knapp 2 or 3 weeks after he took over for Kiffin, and the offense has just simply regressed under Cable. So from that standpoint, I think that, you know, that he has not fared well as the play caller. I think as a head coach, he's probably done a little bit better in the eyes of the players. But the real big issue, I think, for Oakland on the overall standpoint is if Al Davis decides to go and find a head coach in the offseason and doesn't extend Cable's contract, doesn't extend the permanent job to him, then Oakland is going to lose a very good offensive line coach, because I can't see Tom Cable taking a demotion and going back to his old position, you know, as the offensive line coach, where he really, like I said, excelled. He took a ragtag team of players, I thought, and built them into one of the better run blocking units in the league. And you know, although they had question marks with their pass protection, I think that was more of a talent level and not so much coaching. And so really, like I said, if the Raiders have to get a new head coach in the offseason, they're also going to have to get a new offensive line coach. And they'll be hard pressed to find one that was as good, at least with the run, as Tom Cable has been.
I know that former Patriots linebacker coach Rob Ryan has had to fill in defensively as well for this team, and just because of some of the problems that have been back there, I wonder if anybody looks at him favorably from an Oakland point of view.
Well, I know that he still holds a lot of support in the locker room, and that's, you know, important, but more importantly, he holds all the support he needs from Al Davis, who loves this guy, and although he won't hire him to be the head coach, you know, and Rob has interviewed for that position numerous times now, and Al has turned him down. It's clear that he does have the label as Al's favorite son, because, you know, Lane Kiffin wanted to fire Rob Ryan at the end of last year and essentially had done that before Davis found out and stepped in and interviewed and said, no, you're not going to do that, and I'm keeping him as my defensive coordinator. And, you know, Rob Ryan has succeeded, you know, with Cable is now 4 head coaches, as 4 different head coaches as the Raiders' defensive coordinator. What defensive coordinator lasts through 4 head coaching changes? Not Dick LeBeau, you know. Certainly not some of the top defensive coordinators. None of these great defensive coordinators would be able to sustain 4, you know, head coaching changes. And so I think it speaks volumes about how much the Raiders, i.e. Al Davis, value Rob Ryan.
Right. You know, Mike, I sure appreciate the time today. The final question I would have for you is, under what scenario, what set of circumstances would have to exist, in your estimation, for Oakland to win this game on Sunday?
Well, it's going to take, you know, one of the better games that they've played this year, obviously, and that's kind of a dumb statement maybe, but, you know, we saw them rise up and beat the Jets in overtime. And really, I thought that point right there that they had turned the corner.
Right.
You know, they didn't just win the game from start to finish. They had to find a way to gut it out. They kept shooting themselves in the foot in the fourth quarter, and they kept fighting, found a way to beat the Jets in overtime. And I thought that was a big step for them. But then they lost the following week, and, you know, and everything that all, you know, 2 steps forward, 3 steps back type of thing. Okay, then they go and they beat Denver, and you think, okay, where was this been all year? Yeah, well, since then, they've lost to Kansas City and lost to San Diego. So it's a big, you know, the ability is there. We've seen it, but it's just a matter of them putting it together. I think that they're going to have to come out. They're going to have to get Darren McFadden involved. That's the only way, honestly, that this offense has a chance to start doing something. This offense can't score touchdowns. It can barely get in range for field goals at this point. So you have to get this kid the ball and repeatedly get him the ball. And if they can do that, then that will be able to open up some of the passing game a little bit, hopefully, for Jamarcus Russell. The other side of the coin is they can't allow the Patriots to get their running game going. They have to sit back and force the game onto the quarterback, whether it's Castle or whoever it is. They have to put the game on that quarterback's shoulders, because if they allow the Patriots to come in and just walk the ball up the gut all day, as they have had, you know, as they've allowed some teams to do this year, then it's just going to be a long day. And again, then it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, because he's just going to sit there and hand the ball off all day. So it really comes down to them for getting their own run started and making sure that the Patriots can't get their running game going.
Mike Wagaman, again, who's the senior writer for Silver and Black Illustrated, here with us inside the playbook. Mike, thank you so much for sharing some insight on the team, and it's greatly appreciated your spending time with us and bringing around a little knowledge about the Raiders, because we'll admit, you know, just not only because of the distance between New England and Oakland, it's been a little bit of a difficult way to get some handle on this team, but quite frankly, with the way that the season has gone, and of course, we've been embroiled in our own sense of, soap operas in a lot of different ways,
exactly.
Especially with a lot of injuries around here, it's been difficult for us almost to focus on opponents from time to time, so sure appreciate the time you spent with us today.
Absolutely, no problem. Anytime, and looking forward to this game Sunday. I love good football. I love bad football. I just love football. So I've seen it all this year, and should be exciting one way or the other.
Good stuff. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks again.
All right, take care.
That's, again, Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated with us here inside the playbook. That's some very forthright comments that he had to make. I appreciate his honesty about the team, certainly about the whole Al Davis debacle from earlier this year. Some very forthright comments, I thought, as well, on some of the personnel challenges that face Oakland, and certainly some honesty when it came to, you know, what they had to do to try to actually win a football game. Keep in mind, here's the one thing that really worries me the most about this Sunday. This is an Oakland team that did beat the Jets, albeit it was at home, but they beat the Jets. They beat the Jets. And if the Patriots are forced to go with Kevin O'Connell at quarterback, I think all bets have to be off on, you know, what your expectations might be for this game. And so I think we'll end up having to, you know, bite some nails and sit on the edge of our seat and hopefully, you know, just grit it out to another win, much like I thought the team had to do this last week against Seattle. I think most everybody expected the Seattle game would be tight, because Seattle is not, you know, your typical 2-10 team. Everybody, you know, realizes that team still does have some talent on it, that it has been, you know, hit by some injuries and some other problems as well. I don't know that we really know what the talent level might be on this Oakland team, which is why we were trying to be as thorough as Mike had time in terms of some of the personnel for Oakland here, simply because we don't know. And he mentioned right off the top of our conversation, he thinks that there's a percentage of guys on this team, maybe a small one, but there are certain guys on this team that have already given up. They've mailed it in. They're done. There's 3 weeks left of the season, and they're just collecting a paycheck. You really don't find that prevalent, even from some of the bad teams, and certainly no one who's willing to admit that that's the case, and yet we might have that here. So it does add some intrigue to the matchup on Sunday. I think it does leave some doubt in my mind, and maybe even some of yours, as to whether or not the Patriots should win this in a walkover. I'm sure there are many of you that will say, they should win anyway, no problem. And I get that. I understand that, and that would be my initial inclination. But I think, number one, yes, they beat the Jets, so they're certainly physically capable if they're able to, you know, do some of the things that perhaps that they've done in the past. That's number one. And number two, if the Patriots are going to be without Matt Castle at any time. Now, I'm taking it, Dan, this means that, is Eric back with us?
John? Yep.
Yes. Yes,
how
Eric. How's it going?
Good. I just have a minute here in between interviews and the start of practice, but I wanted to let you know, we talked to Belichick a few minutes ago, and he addressed the Castle situation right off the bat.
Okay.
I'll just basically read what he said, because I just had a chance to transcribe it.
Okay, go.
So he said, Matt Castle's father passed away Monday night, so our thoughts are with him and his family at this point. From a football standpoint, we'll just handle it the way we normally do. Right now, we're just taking it day to day. He's going to take, I'm trying to read my scribble here. He's going to take care of what he has to do is basically, what he said. So there was no clear indication of how long he'd be gone and how it would affect preparation. He was pressed for more information about that, but in typical Belichick style, he didn't divulge much. So at this point, we don't know a heck of a lot more than we knew before, but hopefully as the days go by here, we will start to learn more. But at this point, that's the best I can do for you.
Okay. Nope. That's an update. I appreciate that, Eric. Thank you. Anything further? No, be sure to let us know.
Sure. Like I said, we got I'm in between players coming in and out, and practice is about to start in about 20 minutes. So if I get anything more newsworthy, I'll give you guys a call back. If not, we'll talk again tomorrow.
Have you had a chance at all to ask any of the players about Matt's situation?
Actually, we did. Junior Seau just expressed his condolences, and then sort of moved on. Was asked about several other things, so the topic kind of changed. But Ellis Hobbs talked, I'd say at length, I guess, about the situation. I actually asked him if he'd had a chance to talk to Matt since the news came out, and he said he hadn't. But that was because Ellis said, you know, in his situation, if it were to happen to him, he's the kind of guy who would want to be alone for a while and to deal with it and sort of collect his thoughts about it. So he kind of, when something like that happens, he sort of treats other people that way. He gives them their space and waits for them to sort of come back. But Ellis also said that when Matt does come back, whenever that might be, he doesn't want to sort of dwell on the situation or dwell on the topic and sort of ask him about it. He said he wants to try to make things as comfortable and as normal as possible. Basically, I guess, saying, you know, once he gets back here, try to get him back into the football groove and try to get his mind off of things, as opposed to talking about it and dredging up more feelings that, you know, he might be dealing with. So that's just kind of an interesting a way to deal with it, I think. But that's kind of the way Ellis wants to do it, and that's the way he plans on doing it. So, but he definitely, you know, expressed his sadness because he said, you know, I still have both of my parents and very lucky to have that, so I don't really know exactly what he's going through, but it certainly feels for his friend and teammate.
Absolutely. All right, that's good stuff. Eric, thanks for checking back in. And
nope.
Like I said, if we
yep.
don't check in with you before the end of the show, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
No problem, John. Thanks.
You got it. Eric Scalavino reporting from San Jose as the Patriots are getting ready to begin practice for the day out there today as they prepare for the Oakland Raiders and determine whether or not they have Matt Cassel at quarterback on Sunday because of the passing of his father. So Coach Belichick addressing that, and I'm sure you'll hear from Coach Belichick a little bit later on in some of the conference calls that we have planned and some of the other media outlets that are covering the team out in California as well before they take on the Oakland Raiders. We'll bring you the very latest as well right here on Patriots.com. All right, let's pause here for another break, and then we'll come back. If you've got emails that you'd like to send, if you'd like to share your thoughts on Matt, on some of the other things that we've talked about today, including the current state of the Oakland Raiders, as we discussed it with Mike Wagaman just a short while ago. The fact is that the Patriots may also be looking for linebacker and or defensive back help before the end of this season. I threw out a couple of names in Matt Chatham and potentially Brian Kelly, who was cut loose by the Detroit Lions today. Whether or not you have any thoughts on those guys, because they certainly could be out there and gettable. And what the Patriots do about Teddy Bruschi, because looks like he's going to be out from around 4 to 6 weeks. Do you throw him on the IR now and just move ahead, or do you hold out a hope that he could return before the Patriots are through playing football this season? Some interesting things to think about, to be quite honest with you. A little bit of intrigue built into these last few weeks of the regular season, wouldn't you say? We'll get to all of that and more when we return right here inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
We're rolling along here inside the Playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook with you here. Web radio at patriots.com. Our email address, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. Of course, the news of the day has to do with the story coming out that Matt Cassel's father, Greg, had passed away, as we've been told today. It actually happened on Monday night late. And I guess Matt was made aware of it yesterday. He left the team to go to his family yesterday as well, late yesterday. And Coach Belichick just addressing the situation in San Jose, where the team is headquartered this week, just a short while ago. And the fact is that there's really nothing else new to report in terms of his availability for this week's game against Oakland. This is something that will be determined over the coming hours and the next couple of days. In the meantime, from a football sense, again, it sounds kind of crass to even talk about it, but from a football sense, the best guess here is that certainly the Patriots will give Kevin O'Connell all the reps that he needs in case Matt decides to stay with his family and grieve, which I think all of us could certainly understand. Those of us who have lost parents in the past, you handle griefs in so many different ways. There is no right way and there is no wrong way to handle it. There just isn't. Different people respond to different things. And however Matt needs to handle it is how Matt needs to handle it. This is a life story. It's not just about one game or one week or, you know, one occurrence here. It's a life story. It's forever now. So However he needs to handle it is how he needs to handle it. And if that means he misses on Sunday, the Patriots will do the best they can to pick up the pieces without him and move onward, because they do have a game that they need to play. And they do have, a postseason they need to try to, keep fresh in everybody's minds as well. So that would certainly present some opportunity. You know, everybody would feel like, picking it up a little bit and maybe even, winning one for him and his father because of the situation, if it turns out like that. And again, over the next few hours and the next day or so, here on Patriots.com and Patriots.com radio, we'll bring you the latest as we can get it from the Patriots headquarters out in San Jose. This email comes from Jim in Florida. He says, John, first, condolences to Matt and family on the passing of his dad. Of course, none of us knows how this will affect him. He'll have to decide that for himself. I lost my mom last January, so I can empathize. My guess, though, is he will be back in time to practice and to play on Sunday, and I think it will do him a world of good to get back and play football. The fact his parents are divorced, and Matt has two brothers, both baseball players, and a sister to go through this with. I'm sure they'll reassure and encourage him to rejoin the team for Sunday's game, especially with the team and essentially a win out to have a realistic chance to make the playoffs situation. If he doesn't play, and if the team loses the game, it would make him just that much more depressed, I would think. All but ending a season, the team has overcome so much adversity in thus far in 2008. With so many walking wounded and guys like Adalys Thomas and Teddy Bruschi hanging in there as best they can, hoping to get back on the field in 08. Well, Thomas has already been IR'd, so that isn't going to happen. Bruschi, we don't know yet. It's possible he could be put on IR, but we don't know yet. I assume that that would happen sooner rather than later. Anyway, continuing here, I think Matt, being the quarterback and team leader, will decide to put the team first, and once assured his family is okay and having paid respects to his dad, he'll rejoin the team for Sunday's game. The flip side to this, of course, is that since this is his first year at the helm and he is still developing, he'll need to rejoin the team in time to make meetings, get the game plan, and get his reps. Belichick says we'll probably go with O'Connell anyway. Well, that all, it's excellent conjecture, excellent, insight, I think, Jim. Again, we're going to have to just give this a little more time, a few more hours at least, perhaps as much as another day or so. And then perhaps when Coach Belichick has his media conference by tomorrow, perhaps we'll have more information on Matt's status for Sunday and whether or not Kevin O'Connell could be put into the lineup in that regard, and whether or not he's even receiving the reps. I think we can all assume that he's going to get some reps here in practice starting today. He says, John, Matt Chatham sounds like a plan. Hopefully Teddy will be back in 08. Yes, Izzo is an option, but Chatham would be a smart pickup, and who knows if we'll lose another linebacker in the next three games. It has been one of those years. As for the defensive back, Brian Kelly, who was released by Detroit earlier, I'm not sure about signing him. Any player who can't start for a winless team doesn't impress me. We already have a Delta O'Neal in the defensive backfield. Now, it's true. Although I would argue that even though we've seen O'Neal doesn't have the foot speed, certainly that he once had, he plays way too soft for my liking. He does still have some field smarts out there. And I think, at this stage of the game with 3 weeks left, you might be in a situation where you need a relatively capable body out there. And I don't mean to lessen the situation, but let's face it. He's been a 10-year, this is his 11th year in the NFL for Brian Kelly, and he's a veteran player, so even some veteran guile might be what you need out there. I realize that you might be like me in a sense, say, well, you've got Will Hyde out there, so why not go ahead and let him continue to do it, but frankly, you're in a stage where I still think you need bodies. If somebody else goes down, and there's every reason to think that it could happen with 3 weeks left, considering everything that has gone on this year, you might just need bodies. And again, when you sign a guy from a team like Detroit who got buried on the depth chart and I guess didn't live up to, what Detroit thought they were getting when they signed him to begin with and when they took him away from Tampa Bay, if he's got any kind of sense of professional, pride about him, he's not going to want to end this season on a down note. And you'd think that by being picked up by a team that has at least an opportunity to compete, you know, for a playoff spot, that that would, you know, charge him back up again and give him an opportunity to say, all right, I'm turning chicken, you know, feathers into chicken salad here for the remainder of this season. You know, how many times have we heard free agents picked up by this team feel like they've, you know, been renewed? Almost unanimous. Every time this team picks up an extra player, it's kind of like, oh, I'm being picked up by New England. Oh, my goodness, that's unbelievable. You know, it's a great team, great organization. They're in the playoff hunt, yada, yada. And so guys get charged up by that. So maybe you jumpstart a guy like Brian Kelly a little bit if you do it. And I'm not saying they're going to, but he's out there. And so he's a name that I think deserves some kicking around on. Jim says, I'm a 35-year fan of the Pats, and I'm really proud of this team for all they've accomplished with so many injuries in 08. I was in New Orleans to watch the Raiders lose to the Saints 34-3 in October. So he says, my prediction for Sunday, Castle on the Pats 31, Raiders 17. All right, Jim, I appreciate your sending a thorough and thoughtful email to the proceedings here today. And again, your thoughts are welcome. Webradio at Patriots.com. We spoke a short while ago again with Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated, their senior writer, about how Tom Cable has sort of approached this season as the interim head coach for the Oakland Raiders, stepping in for the fired Lane Kiffin from earlier and the, shall we say, messy situation that Al Davis kind of put this franchise in. And, you know, it's certainly an unbelievably difficult situation for any coach to be in, much less an interim coach. Much less an interim coach who came from the offensive line, and when he was a college head coach, he really didn't have much success at Idaho. So here's a guy, you could look at it one of two ways. He absolutely has everything to lose, and he has absolutely nothing to lose. And he's got to try to find a way to get this team somewhat motivated and ready to go. And based on what Mike told us earlier, you know, some of these guys in this Oakland team have given it up already for 2008. He's got to find a way to put a team together that's going to compete and compete hard and try to win a game against a Patriots team that's desperate to get a win themselves on Sunday. Pretty tall task, I would say, for any coach, much less an interim coach. A conference call with members of the Patriots media held just a short while ago, and we'll let you listen into it here with Oakland head coach Tom Cable.
Could you talk about what the Patriots are walking in on out there in terms of crowd? The Black Hole is certainly, I would think, a unique advantage to the Raiders, a collection of characters like no other in the NFL. What kind of element do they present out there for a visiting team?
Well, you know, they're very passionate, obviously, and they love their football team, and they get dressed up for it, and they tailgate a little bit like a college environment that way, and then they're outrageous.
It really is an element like no other in the league, wouldn't you say?
I've never seen anything like it. You know, it's very unique. I think the best way to say it is they're outrageous. You know, and they plan it and they work at it, and they're awesome. It's important to them, and you know, they take it very serious.
Pretty rough on a visiting team.
Can be.
Could you talk about Matt Castle and the progress you've seen in looking at film and the development that you know, maybe you've seen on him on film from when he took over early in the season?
Well, the thing that impresses you is that the way the players around him have stepped up. You know, they got good players at tight end, at wide receiver, in the backfield, and a good offensive line, and you see everybody has raised their level of play around him. And I think that that's allowed him to develop and allowed him to make the tremendous improvement he's made.
And could you also talk about your own guy, Jamarcus Russell, another young quarterback who hasn't played a whole lot, but certainly, you know, seems to have be the franchise quarterback out there.
Yeah, you know, he started out with some struggles, like you would expect every guy to do it, really playing for the first time, and then he got into a month there where really improved every game. You saw it in practice, you saw it on game day. You know, three out of the four last games we played, he's thrown 68% completion. So there's some real positives going on there. You know, at the same time, he's still growing and he's still learning.
I assume he's coming off that ankle injury. He's all right to go this week.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it difficult at this time of year? Certainly, the Patriots have a whole lot to play for. The Raiders are, you know, I don't want to say they're playing out the string, but just to keep guys inspired at this time of year, where you are 3-10.
Well, I think it really reflects your character. You know, how you play and how you prepare. the effort that you give these last 3 weeks, I think will be a real reflection of our character as an organization, as a football player, and as football coaches.
And certainly there are players playing for beyond this year at this point, obviously.
Well, and that's kind of the message to them. You know, you're playing for something, whether it's, you know, we're out of the playoff race, obviously, but you're playing for something, your future. You're playing for another contract, your next move in free agency, whatever that is. So I think there's still a lot, you know, personally for guys to play for.
Coach, how do you defend a Randy Moss and a Wes Welker?
Well, we're not sure yet. You know, they're both very, very good players. You know, Randy is a in his own world and many times. And then Welker, you know, he's the guy who does all the dirty work, tremendous quickness, unbelievable ball skills. So we got our hands full.
Coach, when you see a almost 40-year-old Junior Seau come back and play last week, literally right off the street and play almost 50% of the snaps, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who, you know, was a great, great player. And, you know, you just turn on the film and watch him making plays last weekend. And he's played so much and done this so long that really he's programmed, you know, and he's had great training. It is extraordinary for him to, you know, come off whatever he was doing and step on the field and start making plays like he did. But, you know, he's a great player. He always has been. And you just got to tip your hat to him.
Do you, Coach, do you have to assume, you know, with that Patriot defense that they'll plug the holes and that unit will be fine?
You have to. I mean, they've done it every week. They've lost somebody. Someone's plugged in, and they really have just, you know, kind of been steady. And you know, they're very fundamentally sound. They play extremely hard, very physical. So I don't think you can make that team unless those are your characteristics. Is that it?
You guys done?
I'm good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, so there's Tom Cable, the interim head coach of the Oakland Raiders. Sounded to me like it was short, sweet, and not necessarily to the point. It's difficult to, you know, manufacture, I think, stories out of a team that's 3-9, especially when you don't even know yourself if you're going to be around for too much longer, as I'm sure he probably feels. And yet you've got a job at hand, and your job is to try to do, as I suggested a couple of moments ago, get a team ready to play a team that's desperate like New England. You know, the Raiders are desperate too. They're desperate to, you know, some of them anyway, are desperate to get a win. A lot of these guys desperate to save their jobs. You know, maybe a guy like Cable feels like he's playing for his job, so he wants to try to figure out a way to put a charge in these guys. I mean, it's all sorts of, you know, conjecture going on here. It's just different. So an interesting situation, to say the very least, when it comes to the Oakland Raiders and trying to get ready. I was looking, actually, a little while ago about an update on the playoff situation, and the only thing I can tell you is what we found out here is the driver's seat, I think, as we all know, still belongs to the Jets in the division. It is there is a, you know, certainly a plausible scenario where the Jets and the Dolphins could, you know, their meeting at the last game of the season could mean the division title, and the Patriots, even though they would win this week, and if they win next week, could still leave them on the outside looking in. Even, you know, if they beat Buffalo in the finale, it's possible. That's a scenario that seems to be more and more prevalent, or at least played about with over the last day or two. So, if you're trying to look at this, you know, from a, all right, how do we get in picture? Easiest thing to do here, kids, is just to say, all right, the Jets and the Dolphins each have to lose one more time. And yes, one of those losses can be to the other one. So what you have to hope for over the next 2 weeks is that either the Jets or the Dolphins lose. If one of those teams can lose one of their next two, and just one, then, of course, you'd have to have the right one win in the final week. Say the Jets lose this week because they've lost two in a row and they seem to be reeling a little bit, almost inexplicably. Well, if that happens, they lose again, then you'd root for the you'd root for the Jets to beat the Dolphins if the Dolphins win their last two, and that would be your ticket in if you can win out. So, anyway, that's just part of the scenario. It's probably going to get more and more jumbled over the course of the next week or so as we discuss all these things. And again, we'll jump into some of this conjecture with Russell Baxter in tomorrow's program on Thursday's playbook as well. Just to kind of recap where we've been today, because there's a lot of different things that we've touched on. Of course, the top story of the day having to do with Matt Cassel, the passing of his father, that has been confirmed by head coach Belichick, and the fact that it happened Monday night. The team still has not heard from Matt, as he is going to be with his family. And so as far as his situation is concerned for this Sunday's game in Oakland, that has yet to be determined. I'm sure once that determination is made, you can find out about it here on Patriots.com. The other story has to do with Teddy Bruschi, who flew back to Boston from the West Coast after he injured his knee on Sunday in Seattle. Apparently, according to several sources, he does not need to have the knee surgically repaired right now. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen later, but apparently not now. But the problem is there may not be enough time left in the regular season to get him back onto the field. Looks like it could be a 4 to 6 week healing process. And, of course, with only 3 weeks left in the regular season, it means that if Bruschi came back, it would be in the playoffs or maybe even as late as the Super Bowl. And, of course, there's great doubt as to whether or not right now the Patriots will even reach the postseason. And so you're kind of stuck in almost a double-edged sword situation. You need to have help now. You might need another body now because you're trying to get into the playoffs with Bruschi apparently not an option. And yet if you put him on the IR to get a body now, well, then you lose him for something in the playoffs that you still are trying to get to. So you can see where you're kind of between a rock and a hard place and trying to decide what to do about Teddy Bruschi. And that will be a decision undoubtedly that will also be determined over the course of the next day or two. So there are some things story-wise that are going on with this team, both off and on the actual playing field, and that's the absolute latest where that's concerned. The other story that I wanted to just briefly touch on before we got to talking with Eric and Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated was the story that I was talking about that I think is going to end up having some far-reaching effects in professional sports. I mentioned this in the opening of the program, that the AFL, the Arena Football League, apparently, is going to suspend operations for 2009. So this is where, you know, the downturn in the economy continues to affect the sports world and really now is going to affect a professional sports league, an entire league. They're talking about shutting it down and then working toward a single entity league where, you know, I would guess somewhat similar to how Major League Soccer is run, where the league kind of owns the franchises and the individual investor operators run the teams. But the plan is to start up again in 2010, the Arena Football League. But again, no official confirmation from the AFL. That's just something that came out of Kansas City, where one of the franchises is located. And by the way, just as a side story to this, the Arena Football 2 League, the AF2, which is sort of served as the minor league or training ground to the Arena Football League teams. The AF2 says it will continue to operate as usual, and it will play this year. 2009 is their 10th anniversary season, so the AF2 has lasted a heck of a lot longer, I think, than a lot of people realize. This would have been the 23rd season for the Arena Football League, which is a long time, I think we all know. But this is the 10th season for AF2. They operate primarily in smaller towns, smaller markets, you know, maybe in 5,000 to 7,000 seat arenas. The AF2, though, operates entirely on its own. It is not directly affected by the AFL's current situation, and they say they are open and ready for business in 2009. So an interesting side note to the apparent problems that the Arena Football League is going through at this stage of the game. All right, so those are the major news items of the day. We're going to wrap up the program today by letting you listen into the conference call with Nnamdi Asamoah. He is the starting cornerback and certainly one of the premier defensive backs, I think, not only in the AFC, maybe even in the entire NFL. He is up for free agency in the offseason, although, as Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated told us earlier in the program today, he would not at all be surprised if the Raiders were to slap the franchise tag on him again, because that's what they did this year. And he would be stuck, if you will, with Oakland at least one more year before true free agency could be realized by Asamoah. And he says the asking price for Russell Moen, by the way, would probably be a couple of first-round draft picks, and I don't know if that'd be too steep for anybody to pay at this stage. So, anyway, that's the latest where he's concerned, but he was the Oakland Raiders player that met with members of the Patriots media via conference call. And we'll have the latest on Matt Castle, on Teddy Bruschi, and on the preparations for Oakland on tomorrow's playbook. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel. And here is Asamoah with members of the Patriots media.
Nambi, you looking forward to matching up with Randy Moss on Sunday? We know you guys play a lot of man coverage, and you usually end up facing off against the best guy.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it. You look forward to every game. I don't think I'm looking forward to it, you know, any more than I looked forward to the past games we've played, just because, you know, you kind of got to treat every game with the same intensity. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing him, though. I was close with Randy when he was here. He taught me a lot about playing corner. His first year here was my first year starting, actually being thrown into the fire there. So he helped me out a whole lot with that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him and catching up with him.
Can you explain a little more about what he taught you and how he helped you specifically?
Well, he helped me a lot with confidence because, you know, I would do some good things. You know, I have size and I have longer arms and long speed and those sorts of things. And, you know, he would come up to me in training camp, and he knew it was my first year starting, but he would tell me, you know, receivers hate that type of stuff. They hate bigger corners. You know, they don't like guys that have the attributes that I have, and if I can continue to use them, you know, I could be pretty special. Now, this was in 2005, and, you know, I had just moved from safety, so I really wasn't that sure of myself. But, you know, hearing those things from a guy like Moss, who had already been in the league tearing it up, you know, it helped me a lot with my confidence. And I'm like, if Moss is telling me that stuff, then, you know, I've got a chance. And, you know, it just helped me out. It just helped me out a lot. You know, he would help me out with you know, different ways to play coverages that receivers hate to go against, and, you know, just different nuances that can get under a receiver's skin. And, you know, I've always kept those things in my pocket and have been grateful to him for that.
Are you still in contact with him?
No, I haven't been in contact with him since he's been in New England. I think I might have spoken to him once last year, and that's it. But, you know, when he was here, we'd talk all the time. And, you know, it's the nature of the league. You kind of, you're closer when you're with someone that you're working with. And then, you know, things happen and guys leave. So, but no, he knows I respect him. And I know he respects me, too, from when we were here. And I think that level is mutual.
I'm guessing you're not surprised by his success in New England.
Absolutely not. I mean, we would actually have talks about life and about football, and, you know, he would let me know, you know, that he knows, it's kind of like he would let me know that it wasn't over for him. You know, he would let me know that this was kind of just a stop, a road stop in his career. He knew that he would have fun again, and he would be happy again, and he would be in an offense that he liked, and he would be around a team and a group of players that were as committed to winning as he was. And, you know, it kind of hurt him while he was here to see some of the things that were going on, you know, and then you would see maybe a lack of production from him. But, you know, he was frustrated, and everyone deals with their frustration in different ways. But I'm not shocked at all that he's been able to do what he's done. And, you know, I've cheered him on since he's been with New England, just because I knew the type of player he was. I knew the heart he had. I knew the type of person he was. A lot of people, you know, he gets a lot of flack from the media a lot of times, but I've always said that he was, you know, one of the coolest, one of the best players that I've ever been around, just because he was so carefree, you know, and didn't have any problems with anyone. So I knew he'd be able to turn it around. I was just happy that he got that success last year with New England, with the Pro Bowl and the record and those sorts of things.
How frustrated are you now by what's gone down with Oakland?
Well, I think it's clear that I've been frustrated. I mean, I've spoken to you all about it on a few occasions now. I usually don't speak much, but it reached points where the frustration level can get so high that sometimes you don't want to be silent about it anymore, you know. So, I mean, my frustration level has hit a different level this season than it's hit any other season. I know that we still have 3 games left, and we still have a chance to leave with modicum of respect. If we can go out in these next 3 games and play with some pride and with more, you know, accountability, then we've got a chance. But I think it's clear that not just myself, but a few of us here are frustrated by the season that we're having.
It's one of the things that frustrates you, going out with pride, that too many of your teammates are just, you know, collecting paychecks for the next 3 weeks and whatever.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
I said, you said being frustrated. Is one of the things that frustrates you that some guys really aren't playing for pride, they're just playing for the next 3 paychecks, and if you lose, you lose, it doesn't matter?
Well, you know, and you really have to search the hearts of players in this league, because you really don't know exactly what their reasons are for playing, or if they're being apathetic toward games and preparation. Sometimes you really don't know. And, you know, I really don't know that. I just know that there are times when we lose when it looks like we won, you know, after the post-game scene. You know, and then that's what frustrates me. And then other things that are frustrating are making the same mistakes play after play, game after game, and just not being able to grow. You know, it's clear that not only in life, but especially in football, it's all about growth and getting better. And the fact that we haven't been able to do that, there's seriously something wrong. And it does get frustrating. I mean, as a human being, it gets frustrating to feel like, you know, things are stagnant and they're not progressing. And we've seen that here this year and over the past years.
Namdi, I'm sure you're aware that New England's other receiver, Wes Welker, is leading the NFL in receptions. From what you've seen and from a defensive back's perspective, what makes a guy like him, who's on the smaller side, such a difficult target for defense?
He's just so aware. You know, his awareness level is probably among the best as far as receivers go in the National Football League. I mean, he's just so aware of how to get open and how to find holes in a defense, and he just trusts that his quarterback will get him the ball in those situations. And it's not necessarily that he'll go out and one-on-one, he's just, you know, destroying guys the whole game. It's just, he knows how to get open. You know, it's difficult to explain. I mean, it's not that difficult to explain. He just knows how to get open. You watch him on film, and regardless of the team he's playing against, he knows the spots that are going to be there, and he's been able to show up big for the Patriots the past couple of years.
Do you think his size is an advantage?
You know, the size can be an advantage regardless of who you are. I think it's clear that Moss's size is an advantage. It's clear that, you know, a guy a little shorter than Moss can have advantages. But with Wes, sure, he has advantages as well because he's a quicker player. You know, a lot of times you get the taller, longer guys, they're not as quick. They may have more downfield speed. But with Wes, you know, he's quick, and that helps him getting open in those little spots, you know, because you can expect him to go somewhere, and if he stops on a dime, you know, you'll have a tough time getting back to him just because his center of gravity is so low to the ground. You know, it's definitely a positive for him in that regard.